This is the Winchester Talking newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 20th of April, 2018. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking newspaper, where we read extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle. I'm Peter Lydiard, your presenter for today, standing in for either Vara or Tom Williams, who have the temerity to go on holiday this week. Our editors this week are Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas, and I'm joined by our three readers for this week, Frieda Bates.
Hello.
Paul Maxwell Tomlinson.
Hello.
And Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Well, first, our regular notices. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with recordings you've received from us, please telephone the lovely Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. And when you finish listening to this recording, please put the memory stick in the yellow envelope, putting your address label inside the envelope and pop it in the post. No stamp required, of course. Thank you. Just to remind you that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen to them again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, you might like to know that as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, which is www.winchestertalkingnews.com. And there you can either listen to it off the website, or you can download the recording to listen to later. Or you could even plug your memory stick into the USB port on your computer. The possibilities are endless. Well, we're on to our main headlines for this week, which are Go Ahead for Hotel, MP throws backing behind Andover Road candidate, and Southern Water drops plans for a new pipeline. So, what's all this about a new hotel, Frieda?
Go Ahead for Hotel. Plans to bring a budget hotel to Winchester High Street have been approved, despite objections from a major Winchester organisation. The controversial proposals will see a 62-bedroom travelodge in the heart of the city, taking over a number of empty units. The go-ahead follows changes to the scheme after criticism from a number of people and organisations, as well as Winchester City Council's urban design officer. But despite the alterations, the plans still draw criticisms from the preservation watchdog's City of Winchester Trust. The Trust's objection stated, "The almost total lack of modelling causes a troubling out-of-character blandness. On the High Street elevation, there are no cornices or string courses, no distinctive parapet detail, and no robust window surrounds, all of which would provide subtle shadow lines. In Market Street, there is also a puzzling lack of emphasis at the hotel entrance, particularly in comparison with the Wessex on the other side of the road. This does not mean that such features have to copy traditional detailing in the past, whatever the period. Skilled devices were incorporated into the prevailing style to provide a degree of interest and coherence that is so lacking in this proposal. The Trust therefore continues to object to its application." Urban Design Officer Dr. Hatem Nabi has not commented on the application since the plans were amended, but had previously said the proposed height would make the building incoherent with the context of Market Lane and expose the large roof and plant areas, making them prominent and visible from distant views. The application, therefore, does not respond positively to the character and context of its locality. Concerns were also raised about the lack of additional parking included in the scheme, but a transport statement produced by consultants Campbell Reith on behalf of applicants the London Borough of Southwark Pension Fund felt it was not needed. They said, This is considered appropriate due to the site's accessibility to public transport and local facilities. Staff cycle storage will be provided within the surface areas, while the hotel visitors' parking will be provided along the frontage. It is recognised that the hotel guests might travel by car to stay in the city. Winchester has a number of local car parks located in and around the city centre. Despite the objections, the plans were approved by a planning officer, rather than being sent to a councillor-based planning committee that is often used to decide more controversial and large-scale proposals. As previously reported, the new hotel will occupy the floors above the former Next store, next to Rick Stein's upmarket restaurant and Debenhams, and a short walk from the Cathedral and Winchester Guild Hall. The site, which has remained empty since Next left last June, would undergo extensive redevelopment, with dramatic changes to the visual appearance. The plans retain the ground floor as shops, with the hotel sitting above and access via a foyer in Market Lane. Despite the specific criticisms, the idea of bringing a hotel to High Street received support, including from the City of Winchester Trust. Catherine Turness, Winchester Business Improvement District's Executive Director, also said, "Tourism research has suggested for some time that there has been a need for more hotel beds in Winchester. And clearly, the BID would encourage a facility that allows visitors to stay longer and spend more time in city centre businesses and spend more money." City Councillor Fiona Mather added, "It could bring a bit of life back." Oh dear. Now, I'm looking at a picture which does indeed show a rather box-like structure over the three shops on the ground floor. And certainly it does not have any particular interest either in the windows or in the facade itself.
Good, thank you, Frieda. Now, Paul, please, something about the Andover Road, I understand.
Yes, Winchester's MP has thrown his backing behind a campaign to stop a major road being diverted as part of a housing project. In a message backing Conservative City Council candidate and campaigner Paul Twelvetree, Steve Bryan, MP, urged residents to support his bid to keep the Andover Road open. As previously reported, the road, a major route to the north of the city, is set to be diverted as part of the King's Barton, Barton Farm estate development. Earlier this month, Winchester Conservatives reignited the row when campaign material in the Wanston and Micheldever ward, which City Council leader Caroline Horrell represents, argued there is still time to reverse the controversial decision. Now, Mr. Bryan has said, Paul Twelvetree has been formidable in leading the Save the Andover Road Star campaign right from the start. If you want to keep the road open, and I personally think it is the right course of action, it is essential that he is elected to officially represent you in Winchester City Council on Thursday, May the 3rd. Paul needs to be in the best position to keep the momentum up on the issue and pressure the local authorities to listen to local people. The decision to divert the road, signed off under a Conservative-controlled council several years ago, had appeared to have been settled after Hampshire Transport Chief Councillor Rob Humby raised the prospect of a change as part of the Winchester Movement strategy in November. Winchester City Council Corporate Director Steve Tilbury dashed hopes, saying that although the route can be amended by the proper authorities, the current location was enshrined in the planning decision for the estate, and there were no discussions going on about any change. A change would require King's Barton's Developments, CALA, to submit a revised planning application, something that they have no intention of doing. Now, this article is headed by a picture showing a crowd in the St. Barnabas ward, headed by Mr. Twelfth Tree and the Liberal Dem Anne Weir, Labour's Adrian Field, and the Green candidate Robert Parker, and the crowd behind are holding up placards which read, "Keep it open."
Thank you, Paul. Daphne, something about a change of heart on a new pipeline.
Yes, Southern Water drops plans for new pipeline. A limit has been agreed on Southern Water's access to two iconic Hampshire rivers, leaving it to change its multi-million pound pipeline plans. A public inquiry had been launched by Environmental Secretary Michael Gove into the amount of water that can be taken from the Test and Itchen, and now a limit has been put in place, saving the salmon that breed in both. It means that the company has not only abandoned its long-standing plans for a £50 million pipeline, but has also now agreed to tight restrictions after the inquiry outcome. Southern Water has scrapped plans for a pipeline that could have transferred up to 45 million litres of water a day from the Test to the Itchen. In response to the agreement, Dr. Alison Hoyle, Director of Compliance at Southern Water, said, "We take our environmental responsibility very seriously, and we are pleased to have reached an agreement with our regulator which protects the precious and unique environment of our chalk stream habitats, whilst ensuring security of water supply. The agreement over abstraction from these special rivers should not distract from the equally important planning that will ensure that generations to come will experience our chalk stream habitats." Dr. Hoyle added that they were already consulting over construction of new water resources. The chalk streams are home to unique populations of Atlantic salmon and also supply much of South Hampshire's drinking water. More than 10 years ago, the Environment Agency proposed that the water firm should reduce abstractions from the Itchen during droughts because it is designated as a special area of conservation. Representing the Testwood and Nursling salmon fishery, Fish Legal, argued that extra abstraction would risk deterioration in the lower Test. Andrew Kelton, lead solicitor for Fish Legal, said, "Fish Legal is confident that in the long term, the tight limits and public accountability imposed by these agreements will mean that Southern Water cannot now rely on increased abstraction and transfer from Testwood. Ultimately, only time will tell, but this appears to represent an end to the company's long-held plans for further exploiting the chalk stream sources of Southern Hampshire, and therefore a victory for one of this country's most precious natural assets." And there's a wonderful photograph of the River Test in the spring with some sheep grazing along the banks, and it looks quite idyllic.
Thank you, Daphne. Now, a quick rundown of what follows. We start with the death notices, then we have Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, historical items, Chronicle comment, Ron Allison's column, letter from Westminster, Belgara and Watson, and lighting up times. So first we have the death notices. Bowl, Eva Doreen Bowl, peacefully, 11th of April, aged 99 years.
Edmonds, Adrian Arthur Edmonds, 7th of April, aged 83.
Elliot, Irene Elliot, 8th of April, aged 105 and a half.
Hunt, Alan Stephen Hunt, 5th of April, aged 82.
Johns, Brian Johns, known as Compo, 5th of April, aged 80.
Knight, Valerie Muriel Knight, nay Dyer, suddenly, after a short illness, aged 83.
Mitchell, Dr. Hilary Jean Mitchell, formerly Gardner, nay Hayden, peacefully, on the 8th of April, aged 93.
Payne, Christopher Valentine Payne, 26th of March, aged 72.
Salter, Dr. John Salter, formerly of Elm Road, Alresford, peacefully on the 25th of March. Right, and now we have Christian comment written this week by Liz Tatham, read by Paul, please.
This is entitled A Time for Prayer. Probably, like many of you, I have a lot rumbling around my mind at the moment. Chemical weapons, retaliation. Should we or shouldn't we have joined in the airstrikes on Syria? The Commonwealth Games in Australia. All that peace, fun, and the best of human behaviour and performance. How can these conflicting events be happening on the same planet at the same time? Why is it that we are both good and very bad all at once? Well, I don't know. I don't have any answer as to why evil and cruelty exist. I only know, as we see, that it does exist and that we all carry the ability to separate ourselves from God and his goodness in one way or another and to one degree or another. What can we do about it when we see terrible things happening? People suffering and dying, or our home planet Earth being desecrated, or even suffering through homelessness, loneliness, or poverty in our local community. Local is where I try and begin, when I know my opinion on the worldwide stage is an unheard cry in a storm. We can give to reputable charities that work in these regions of war and hunger. We can sign petitions for justice and peace and help in our locality in so many ways by giving, visiting the lonely, volunteering. All these actions make a difference, even if they are small, and we wonder if they can make a change, but they do. Oh, and we can pray. Sometimes I just want to throw a prayer shawl over my head and throw myself at the feet of God at the foot of the cross. I feel something primitive pulling me to say nothing. Just enter the silence and let God hear my incoherent thoughts, worries, fears and prayers. Just as our individual actions, even small ones, make a difference to someone else, so also does personal prayer, even when we don't know what we say. On a positive note, last week I was rehearing the words of Carl Jenkins' piece, The Armed Man. After describing all the horrors and awfulness of war, it finishes with the joyful prospect of 1,000 years of peace. I'm hopeful beyond 1,000 years. Then there was a much-reported book launch of Mark Byford's The Annunciation in Winchester Cathedral, also last week, and reported in the Hampshire Chronicle. It's a record of Mark's conversations with over 100 people on the moment when the angel came to Mary and asked her if she would carry the Son of God, giving him humanity, the life that we have. As we know, she said yes, and so we have hope. God living among us and returning after his death. He will take us beyond all our suffering in the end. The Annunciation, the most important event in human history, said one bishop in this book. Indeed it is.
Right, now we go on to letters to the editor, please, starting with Frieda, please.
This letter is from John Kind, Alison Way, Winchester, and it's about the High Street. Sir, two independent shops are set to close, Chronicle, front page, April the 12th. Since 2011, and on behalf of the Winchester Business Improvement District, I have published a quarterly business barometer report. The report monitors the performance of nearly 70 outlets, both national and independent, in the city centre. The latest report for January-March 2018 may help to inform the debate about the local retail scene. Here are some relevant statistics. 1. More than 40% of outlets are taking self-help initiatives to improve their results in an extremely difficult retail environment. They include innovative product ranges, special deals and promotions, a renewed emphasis on store management to provide excellent customer service, and investments in technology to improve competitiveness and efficiency. 2. There is concern expressed by 30% of shop owners and managers that Winchester is losing its appeal as a retail destination. There is a lack of independent outlets and a lot of chain shops, as you reported in your columns last November. Evidence suggests that 10% of the outlets on the High Street are independent. 3. The severe winter weather has obviously affected High Street footfall. More than 20% of stores reported footfall reductions of up to 40%. Some 9% reported increased footfall. National High Street footfall in the non-food sector fell by 8.5% in the first quarter of 2018. 4. The Winchester High Street shop vacancy rate of 3.1% is far less than the national figure of 8.9% reported by Springboard a few days ago. 5. To survive and prosper, Winchester retailers will need to supplement their physical presence with a strong online capability, including click and collect. So far this year, UK online non-food sales increased by 6.5%. The comparable in-store figure was a decline of 4%. Winchester did rather better, reporting no change. 6. 9% of Winchester's retailers are performing exceptionally well, with increases in sales of at least 5% year on year. 12 months ago, 25% of city centre stores were achieving that result. There's quite a lot to think about.
Thank you, Frieda. Who was that written by?
John Kind of Alison Way, Winchester.
Thank you. Paul, please.
Peter Allen of Green Jacket Close, Stanmore, writes a further letter following the article on the High Street shops in the Chronicle on April the 12th. Sir, again, two more shops closing. Not surprised. The rents and taxes are not fair. How many shops have we lost over the last 5 years? But don't worry, Winchester councillors have just been announced to be the highest paid in Hampshire. It's like the Silver Hill project. They don't care. They get their money to live in the big houses. They almost sound like a dictatorship. It's so sad.
Definitely. And the next letter comes from Phil Gagg, and it is to do with the same sort of theme. Sir, I was sad to read that two more independent retailers will be closing down in Winchester, from the Chronicle of April the 12th. However, when the owner of Wilds Sports blamed comparatively expensive parking in Winchester for his difficulties, he ignored the facts. He said that, quotes, people can park all day for a fiver right next to the shops in Basingstoke and Southampton, close quotes. According to the internet, it costs £8 to £10 to park all day in central Basingstoke and £7.30 to £8 in central Southampton. Conversely, it costs only £2.10 to park all day on Saturdays at Winchester Station, only 6 minutes' walk from his shop. He, and in the same edition, another independent retailer, stuck by the unhelpful belief that retailers will prosper most if there is plentiful parking close to their shops. This belief is not supported by any research or evidence. Studies have shown that in certain circumstances, trade increases, sometimes fourfold, when parking is moved away from shop fronts. Pedestrianisation, too, has been good for retailers in many towns. As Councillor Guy Ashton said on page 2, when we reduced the amount of parking in Friarsgate, we found that business footfall actually increased. Towns with relatively low dependency on cars invariably show more vitality than those that are heavily dependent. Both of these retailers have shops on the one-way system, and any increase in central parking spaces will inevitably result in more traffic congestion outside their shops. This is the one factor that is most likely to reduce their takings. The resultant traffic blight will deter customers from visiting their shops. Independent retailers are important for Winchester. Even more important, though, is air quality and its impact on everybody's health. It must be a top priority to clean up the air that shoppers, shop workers, pedestrians, and car passengers breathe by reducing the volume of traffic in the centre. This will increase trade too. More parking in the centre will only make things worse. Let's hope that the County Council's movement strategy reduces the traffic congestion and pollution threatening our independent retailers. And that comes from Phil Gagg, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
Thank you, Daphne. Reader?
This letter is from Phil Yates of Tower Street, Winchester, and it's headed Bright Idea. Sir, whose bright idea was it in the cafe area of the Discovery Centre to replace the tables and chairs which were situated alongside the window overlooking the forecourt with the display units that once stood between the information desk and the counter? And worse still, erecting a long bench with high chairs for laptop users. Consequently, the area between the information desk and the counter is taken up with more tables and chairs. Why does the laptop and computer have to take preference over customers who come in for light refreshments? There is ample space further up the library with tables used by, wait for it, yes, laptop users. I was in the cafe area recently with a friend, and we could hardly hear ourselves speak, with young mothers and their babies occupying the area and pushing their prams against our chairs. I will not be taking friends there again. After all, there are plenty of cafes and restaurants to choose from in Jury Street. 17 at the last count. And that's from Phil Yates.
Thank you, Peter Paul.
Judith Martin of the Rumsey Road heads her letter, Underspend. Sir, Winchester City Council, in these days of government cuts and austerity, has accumulated an underspend of £950,000. I'm sure they'll say it's down to careful management, but I'm confused about what they plan to do with it. It seems the major spend of £213,000 on PR is part of the even larger figure, £997,000, that is to be spent on the three major projects that have all come along at once: Silver Hill Mark II, Station Approach, and the new Leisure Centre. But surely that isn't connected with any underspend. These projects have hardly come as a surprise and should have been budgeted for over several years. The hope must be that the money isn't to be spent on yet more duff consultancy. And I categorically don't include JTP and the Sterling work here. Although I can see how previous expensive advice might need more spin doctors to attempt to make it palatable. Money towards the eventual movement strategy might be well spent, as long as it isn't like the repeated efforts to improve various inadequate and dangerous junctions, where the money just seems to disappear into one of the many potholes in the district. £100,000 for environmental improvements. That's as long as a piece of string. So, some suggestions. Employ the colour factory to to paint the hideous safety barriers, as Christine Knight suggests in her excellent letter in the Chronicle of April the 12th. Implement the plans for St. Maurice's Covert and improve the dreadful public lavatories while they're at it. Hire a cherry picker to get the buddleia and other greenery out of the historic roofs before it causes even greater damage. Can all that be done for £100,000? And for the rest, cough up the money the railway inn needs for its improvements. It provides a terrific service. Sort out the debacle over the industrial space at Bar End that was supposed to be a creative hub. And if there really is a need for more employees, let them be relevantly qualified creatives, urban designers, and people who actually understand development, not people paid to obscure shortcomings and distract the public.
Thank you, Paul. Who was that written by?
That was written by Judith Martin of Rumsey Road, Winchester.
Thank you very much, Daphne.
And the next letter is from Shirley Leslie, and it is on the subject of potholes. Sir, the responsibility for repairing roads and pathways should be borne by the people who damage them. The majority of potholes occur where previous utility works have disturbed the surface of the tarmac and frost gets into the cracks. The culprits are self-evident as the trenches run from one identified junction to another, for example, CCTV, water, etc. Surely it should be possible when granting licences to utility companies to dig up roads for highways departments to demand that those companies return at intervals for a year or two to resurface the area after the backfilling has settled. Why should council taxpayers have to fund repairs to shoddy workmanship by hugely profitable public companies? And that's from Shirley Leslie, Constable's Gate, Hyde, Winchester.
Thank you, Daphne. Frieda?
This letter is from Jane Boyles of Berwick Avenue, Winchester, and it's headed Thank You. Sir, may I please use your pages to give my immense thanks to the very kind lady and her two children who came to my rescue on the evening of Thursday, April the 5th in Compton Street and scraped me off the tarmac, got me back onto to the yard after my horse had decided to flatten me. I have no recollection of anything until waking up in A&E, where I was given a thorough check-over. Apart from the concussion, no other injuries were found. I am very grateful to you and your children for making sure my horse was safe and for taking care of me. Thank you so much. Jane Boyles, Berwick Avenue.
Thank you, Peter. Paul?
Peter Rees, Chairman of the Winchester Constituency Labour Party of Monarch Way, heads his letter, Resign Now. Sir, we will always need police officers to protect us. What is now a complete anathema to the regulation, recruitment and oversight of the police is the Police and Crime Commissioner. Conservative Michael Lane has become a spectacular embarrassment to the police themselves, the public, and the Tory party in their failed attempt to manage Hampshire's excellent police service. 98% of Hampshire's officers have passed a motion of no confidence in him. Realising they were in deep difficulty, the Tories gave all police and crime commissioners the option of raising extra funds by increasing the precept. Their cunning plan was to show their response to public concern about the loss of 21,000 police officers nationally, including 120 plus in Hampshire. Unfortunately, the quality of leadership in most forces was one step ahead in financial planning for the 2018-19, and cuts had already been made due to the government funding cuts. The extra money raised by every Hampshire householder, paying an extra £12 a year, has already been lost. Hampshire's police have been slashed, and frontline policing numbers will not increase. While this was happening, the police commissioner decided he needed a new wallpaper, a better desk, a new flower vase, and a few other administrative necessities, and so he awarded his office budget an extra extra $500,000. Police jobs lost. More money just for his office. Is it any wonder police officers have no confidence in him? The Tories were quick to abolish the democratically elected police authorities, composed of councillors and lay members. They publicly held their chief constables to account. The Tories have starved our communities for money, resources and police on the streets. We have seen the rise of the omnipotent, unaccountable and remote police and crime commissioners managing our right to effective protection. Labour will abolish the commissioners and return to democratically managed police authorities. Michael Lane should resign now.
Thank you, Paul. Can you remind us who that was written by?
That was written by Peter Rees of Winchester constituency, Labour Party, Monarch Way.
Thank you very much.
And now a letter from Liz Blunt of Click Sergeant, the well-known charity. Sir, I am writing to let your readers know about an upcoming campaign to support children and young people with cancer in Hampshire and their families. Click Sergeant, the UK's leading cancer charity for children and young people, have launched an appeal to support a new Home from Home lifeline for families and need public support to make it a reality. Families from Hampshire can often travel many miles to receive the cancer treatment they need for their child at principal centres in places like Southampton General Hospital. Thankfully, Click Sergeant offer free accommodation in their Home from Homes, where families can stay to be close to their child and the hospital. This is a vital service that saves them from long, arduous journeys and the financial impact of cancer. The charity is planning to open a new, bigger and better Home from Home called Jean's House in Southampton this autumn to replace the current Home from Home, which has supported thousands of families since it opened in 1991. The new house, needed to cope with increased demand, will have 7 ensuite family bedrooms, sleeping up to 4 people, 2 open-plan kitchen diners, 2 lounges, and a teenager space, helping families spend more time together. Click Sergeant has launched a fundraising appeal to cover the £1.6 million cost for buying and fully adapting the building. Over £1.2 million has already been raised, thanks to generous support from donors, including Children with Cancer UK, Signet, and Sir Jules Thorne Charitable Trust. And now Click Sergeant are seeking to raise the remaining £400,000 to fully renovate and furnish the house. If you want to find out how you could help our appeal, please contact myself. Thank you. For more information, go to www.clicksergeant.org.uk/movinghomesouthampton, all one word. And that comes from Liz Blunt, Click Sergeant Fundraising Engagement Manager, South Central.
Daphne, reader, please.
This letter comes from John Bampton of Hilly Close, Uzzlebury, and it's headed Memories of Hotel Rebuilding. Sir, when the Potter's Heron Hotel first burnt down in 1966, it was later rebuilt by Bagshaw's builder, who were an old Southampton firm, and I was working for them as a bricklayer at the time. I worked on the building from start to finish. It was completely gutted, and the front was rebuilt. One interesting precaution against a future fire in the roof was to cover the new roof with asbestos sheets before laying the thatching, which would save the building in case of a future fire. I have enclosed a photograph from the Hampshire Chronicle, which shows me and another bricklayer working on the front entrance of the building. As you will see from the picture, there was not much of the building left. I remember the reporter that day was a short man with a club foot. I also remember the architect coming into our mess room and telling us he wanted the brickwork to look like the carpenters did it and the woodwork to look like the bricklayers did it. That's from John Bampton of Hilly Close, Uzzlebury. And indeed, the photograph, which is very faded, but it does show very little of the original building and these two chaps up on scaffolding, presumably working on the roof.
Thank you, Frieda. Paul, please.
This is a letter from Councillor Barry Nicholson, who's the chairman of the Bishops Waltham Parish Council of Little Shore Lane, Bishops Waltham. And he writes about the sign of the new Co-op funeral care store. I read with interest and surprise in your community news section of the Hampshire Chronicle on March the 22nd, a statement that the new Co-op funeral care store in Bishops Waltham had passed the planning process for signage without any objection. I wish to make it known to your readers that there was an objection and that a resolution to object was passed by our Parish Council's Planning, Environment and Highways Committee on the 2nd of January as follows. Objection. The proposed sign, by reason of its colouring, would be detrimental to the conservation area. There was also another comment on the sign in the notice which said, we request for the apostrophe in Bishops, presumably relating to Bishops Waltham Parish Council. A letter to this effect was sent to the Winchester City Planning on the 3rd of January. That's by Councillor Barry Nicholson of the Bishops Waltham Parish Council.
Right, thank you, Paul. Daphne, please.
A short letter from Patricia E. Sir, a most heartening report in today's Chronicle, that was of April the 12th, is that poor Janet Smith, who suffered what sounded like very nasty injuries when she came off her bike when it hit a Hampshire Road pothole, is not going to initiate action against Hampshire County Council. In our current blame-obsessed culture, well done, Janet Smith. I hope you are soon fully recovered. And that comes from Patricia Ead, Quarry Road, Winchester.
Thank you, Frieda.
This letter is from Mrs. Mary Tomlin, née Aven, A-V-E-N, of Southview 22 Laburnum Gardens, Bexhill-on-Sea. And it's headed Nurses' Reunion. Sir, I am trying to organise a 60th anniversary reunion. On June the 7th, 1958, I started my nursing career at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester with seven other girls, all from the Hampshire-Wiltshire area. We all qualified and moved on, but sadly lost contact, although I am still in touch with two of us. We propose meeting up in Winchester and have a celebration lunch and a good old catch-up. Are any of you out there? Please contact me either by email or by letter. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. So here's Mary's address again and her email address. Mary Tomlin, that's T-O-M-L-I-N, nay, Avon or Avon, A-V-E-N, Southview, 22 Laburnum Gardens, Bexhill-on-Sea, East Sussex, TN42PF. And the email address, all one word, all lowercase, MaryDTomlin@gmail.com.
Well, thank you all. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. Or you could email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8A. Now we move on to editorial comment, read please by Frieda. Thank you.
The editorial comment this time is headed Bizarre New Stance on Andover Road. The Chronicle, by and large, thinks that elected councillors of all parties do a decent and tough job trying to balance conflicting demands and pressure. They are criticised by many and subject to often ridiculous criticism from keyboard warriors. But what on earth are the city councillors playing at over the diversion of Andover Road? Permission was granted several years ago to divert the main road through the Barton Farm Kings Barton estate. The proposal by Carla Holmes garnered broad cross-party support at a time when the council was controlled by the Conservatives. It still is controlled by the Conservatives. The question is, why has there been this switch, which can only be described as bizarre? The obvious answer is that elections are looming, and ones in which the Tories and Lib Dems are vying neck and neck. Both are trying to maximise support. Campaigner Paul Twelfthtree can be absolved from any criticism because he has been consistent in his stance on Andover Road for several years. Of course councillors have the right to change their minds over an issue, but surely not when a decision has been made years ago and plans proceeded accordingly. Nothing materially has changed for the councillors, except that the residents of Week, Hairstock, Littleton and villages such as South Wanston are soon going to the polls.
Thank you, Frieda. Now, Daphne, you've got Ron Ellison's column for us, please.
Yes, and it's headed up Concerns, Home and Away. I had two decisions to make about this week's column. Should I write about the bombing of Syria? And if I did choose to do so, what should my position be? I also had to consider that my deadline means that I am writing this on Tuesday, and that by the time anyone is reading it, the situation could very well have changed, and probably not for the better. And anyway, what do I know about it that most readers don't already? I will ignore that last one, leaving you to judge. The matter itself, though, does surely deserve our attention. East-West relations have clearly worsened dramatically, with the two sides involved in what is in effect a proxy war. If it is not to become a more frightening one, then diplomacy, rather than force, must be allowed to prevail. The peace that we have known since the end of the Cold War is clearly no longer holding, and the use of chemical weapons has added a new dimension altogether. Salisbury has become linked to Syria. Already decisions have been taken that we had hoped would never again have to be reached. Royal Air Force warplanes have struck in Syria and were ordered to do so by the Prime Minister Theresa May. Government lawyers had told her that it was lawful to do this under international law, provided the force was proportionate. And Mrs. May acted in our national interest. She did not recall Parliament beforehand, a decision that was challenged by Jeremy Corbyn, the Labour leader, when MPs did meet last Monday. But the view in Downing Street was that there was in any case no time for that. Surely what we must all hope for is that sense will prevail among the heads of government. In situations like this, there can be no real winner, but there is a common enemy. Chemical weapons are a force of evil, and their use must be prevented for the sake of us all. May, Trump, Macron and, yes, Putin all know that our hope has to be that they act wisely, firmly but with restraint. And now, as they say, for something completely different. Although not entirely so, for consideration of the state of Southampton Football Club could also be seen as being in the doom and gloom category. The Saints are in a mess, and although my timetable again means that these words will be overtaken by events, I fear the worst. It is often said that a football team in danger of relegation is too good to go down. Sometimes that is true, and in this case I believe the Saints are quite a decent team. The problem is that they have not been playing well, and that is ultimately down to poor management and the frequency with which managers have been changed in recent seasons. I exclude Mark Hughes from that judgment. He has had no time to make a difference. For the sake of my reputation, such as it is, may I make it clear that I fully understand the relative importance of the state of international relations and that of the Saints. It is just as well, though, that we can compartmentalise our lives, keeping things in the right proportion and, whenever possible, get the balance right. It is an ability which allows us to keep our sanity. Both of today's topics matter to me, but believe me, peace prevails over the Premier League. As to the FA Cup semi-final against Chelsea this weekend, well, obviously, a win for the Saints, ..
Thank you very much, Daphne. Now we go on to Belgarum, who gives us an alternative view of the news. Two items here, and the first one will be read by Paul, please.
Belgarum starts by an article entitled "Giving Back to City from Beyond the Grave." Winchester City Council's head of housing has paid tribute to Winchester-born man Harold Harris, who left more than £600,000 to help build Chesil Lodge. A generous bequest from a public-spirited Mr. Harris saw that £605,198 left to support housing for older people in Winchester. Now, close to completion, the Chesil Lodge Extra Care Scheme development was funded by the Winchester City Council, the Hampshire County Council, and the Homes and Community Agency, and this bequest. Based on the former Chesil Street car park, it will provide 52 affordable homes for those requiring day-to-day support. The scheme is set to welcome its first residents in June, with the handover process beginning next month. The City Council said buyers for all the sale and shared ownership flats were secured months ago, and rented flats are already oversubscribed. Richard Bottom, corporate head of housing, said, "What a wonderful act of kindness from Harold Harris, who I was fortunate to have had the pleasure of meeting several years ago. His bequest will create a legacy for older residents to enjoy the benefits of living in Winchester in spacious homes, knowing that care and support is on hand when they need it. We cannot thank Mr. Harris enough for the donation, which has proved invaluable in helping the council bring the scheme forward." Peter Harris, Harold's brother from Winchester, said, It is great that my brother contributed to Chesil Lodge because he felt, as I do, that it is a worthwhile project. He lived for Winchester, and anything he could provide for the people of Winchester, he would be over the moon about. Born in the 1920s, Mr. Harris grew up in Winchester, attended what is now Peter Simmons College, before moving away to Southend in 1941, where he worked as a police officer. He then served in the Navy until 1946, taking temporary employment in Winchester City Council before returning to serve in the Palestine Police Force until 1948. In 1950, he moved to Hong Kong, where he married his wife, Rowley, and served as chief inspector of the police force. Harold retired in 1987 and passed away in 2011, aged 87. Despite being thousands of miles away from Winchester, he retained a soft spot for the city and visited whenever he came to the UK. He organised the bequest in order to give back to the city something... He organised the bequest in order to give something back to the city he fondly remembered. And there are two small pictures. One shows the building in progress in Chesil Lodge, and the other is a small photograph of Harold Harris in his, it looks like his Palestine police uniform.
And now on a different theme, Belgarum continues to write, Return of the Pop-Up Shop to City Centre. In the late 1990s and early 2000s, when Winchester High Street was really struggling, there were several pop-up shops. Belgarum remembers the current Rawberry premises was empty, and with its large glass windows was a popular spot for School of Art students to show off their creations. Now the former post office on Middlebrook Street is empty, and pupils from St Bede Primary School have purloined it as showcase for their artistic talents. The exhibition, featured in the Chronicle on April the 5th, has made art out of rubbish.
Thank you. Now we have a letter from... I nearly said letter from America. A letter from Westminster.
Not quite. OK, this letter, of course, is from Steve Brine, who is our MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford and is at present Parliamentary Under-Secretary in the Department of Health and Social Care. Regular readers of my column will remember how, back in November, I made reference to the zeal with which Michael Gove has set about his work as Environment Secretary. I think it is fair to say... I think it is fair to say in the time since he has not let up. We have all seen how the environment, and especially concerns about single-use plastics, are front and centre of our domestic politics right now. And I know constituents welcomed the Prime Minister's recent launch of a landmark 25-year environment plan. As promised in our 2017 manifesto, it sets out how the United Kingdom will improve the quality of air and water, create richer habitats for wildlife, and crucially, tackle plastic in the oceans. Furthermore, and to wider claim, we've said in coming years we will crack down on plastics by eliminating all avoidable plastic waste. But the announcement just before Easter that DEFRA will consult on plans to introduce a bottle deposit return scheme in order to increase recycling rates and slash the amount of waste polluting our land and seas was even more warmly welcomed. I am convinced this is right, as we must act now to tackle this threat and curb the millions of plastic bottles a day that go unrecycled. We have already banned harmful microbeads and cut plastic bag use, and now we want to take action on plastic bottles to help clean up our oceans. These are measures that I know resonate with so many of my constituents, including my own children. And locally, I sense the commitment to this agenda is stronger than ever. Coming as they do on top of the recent news from Winchester City Council that it will now introduce doorstep glass collections, I think we're really in a good place at this time. And residents are certainly taking notice, judging by my post bag. Finally, and sticking to the point, I recently met a working mum who lives in Winchester. She has a passion for the environment. As a working dad with the same, we hit it off. And you have to take your hat off to the momentum that Michelle Ingersleeve has already generated for her Final Straw Winchester campaign, which is asking local businesses to stop using single-use plastic straws. Her recent straw amnesty was a huge success, and you will hear much more from us, working together in coming weeks and months. Michelle is a cracking example of Winchester's big society in action. You can find out more and back Michelle's campaign at facebook.com or follow her on Twitter at Final Straw Winch. And as ever, you can see more of my work at www.stevebryne.com.
Thank you, Frieda. Now we have a look back at the archives from the Hampshire Chronicle, starting at 25 years ago, please, Frieda.
25 years ago, Friday, April the 16th, 1993, and this is in two parts, which are very different. The first part begins, "Some of the more damaging aspects of sex discrimination are beginning to register with senior police officers," the research manager of Hampshire Constabulary, Jennifer Brown, believes. In the week in which major research by Dr. Brown and a team based at Hampshire Police Headquarters in Winchester has finally been released for public discussion by the Home Office, she said some officers now realise the difficulties women could face. "I have given talks to a number of forces," Dr. Brown said, "and I have to say I have had conversation experiences where senior officers have begun to accept that some of this is damaging and very unpleasant for the recipient, and they have not appreciated that before." The research, which the Home Office would not release 2 months ago, is based upon questioning in 10 police forces in England and Wales, and some of the evidence it publishes is startling. It states that nearly all police women experience some form of sexual harassment from police men, and this was at a significantly greater rate than that to which other women working within the police force were exposed. A number of quotes provide examples of the type of sexual harassment suffered by women. The first quote, "I was subjected to a sexual assault by my shift, where I was held down and my top half stripped. This left me feeling dirty and, to an extent, vulnerable." The second quote, "For the last 3 years, I have suffered serious sexual harassment by three particular people." We now move on to the next offering. "Obnoxious odours from a farm building could trouble Twyford residents for the rest of the year. Villagers at Bourne Lane and Bourne Fields have complained for over a year about smells from Northfields Animal Feed Mill, which is owned by SJD Holdings. Richard Stobart of Bourne Fields says residents have been affected since the feed mill started about 18 months ago. Many cannot open their windows or sit in the garden when the smell from the feed mill is blowing in their direction." Winchester City Council has received complaints for some time, but it was only at the beginning of this year that the situation was declared unacceptable.
There are two items from 50 years ago on Saturday, April the 20th, 1968. The first one, "To the detriment of the large majority of tenants at Battery Hill, Bishop's Waltham, a small minority have made the estate almost a slum," Mr. G. Hall told Droxford Rural District Council on Tuesday. The Housing Committee had received a petition from a number of tenants protesting over the lack of car parking facilities on the estate, and Mr. Hall said, although he had sympathy with the petitioners, a number of scrap vehicles were aggravating the problem of Battery Hill, and the position would not be tolerated much longer. Mrs. G. A. Shave, chairman of the committee, said a lot of work had been done, but there was no quick solution to the parking problem through lack of available land. She hoped in time the council would find as many parking spaces as necessary. But when we come to the council and say we want to evict the worst families, I hope the council will back us, she added. The second item starts, following the decision of Hampshire County Council at its last meeting to reduce spending in the year ahead by £800,000, the Hampshire Education Committee, at its meeting in Winchester on Thursday, lopped £234,000 off its previous estimate of nearly £28 million. Reductions in the main have been achieved by delaying provision of new furniture and equipment, cancelling further education classes of uneconomic size, and stopping free milk to secondary schools. The revised estimate the Education Committee will submit for approval to the County Council will now be for a net figure of expenditure of £27,593,925. The cuts have reduced the gross expenditure figure from over £30 million down to £29,976,885,000, and income with a slight rise based on an increase of further education fees goes up slightly to £2,382,960,000. If the revised figures are accepted, this means that the Hampshire will be spending over £3 million more on education in the year ahead than was originally planned for 1967-68, a 12.9% increase.
Thank you, Paul. Excuse our laughter, but in a way that's a typical Hampshire Chronicle item, quoting minute figures. That
absolutely.
Okay. Right, Daphne, please.
Sorry.
Right. 100 years ago, on Saturday, April the 20th, 1918, and both items are on the theme of wounded soldiers arriving back here from World War One. On Tuesday afternoon, a further number of wounded arrived at the Great Western Station for distribution among the various hospitals at Winchester. They totaled 100 and all were cot cases. Assisting in the conveying of the men to the different hospitals were the Hampshire Automobile Club's ambulance, the ambulance from Marsh Court, Stockbridge, a car lent by Major Heyman, and also ambulances lent by the Central Military Hospital and the American Army. Refreshments were provided for the wounded in the usual way by the little band of ladies who have worked indefatigably at each convoy for many a long month. And the second item continues. Since the opening of the three Red Cross hospitals in Winchester, namely the Close, Old Churnock House and Trafalgar House, the number of patients received and treated up to the 1st of April has just amounted to the large total of 4,714. On the 29th of March and the 6th of April, we received 128 patients wounded in the Great Battle for Amiens. Men from many units and from many parts of the British Empire, many of the cases being of great gravity. We have also undertaken, at the request of the military medical authorities, to receive at any moment cases of accident from the aviation camps in the neighbourhood, and beds are set apart at Old Churnock House for this purpose and will always be available.
200 years ago was Monday, April the 20th, 1818. His Royal Highness, the Prince of Saxe-Coburg, was on Tuesday elected a freeman of this city. On Thursday, James Henry Lee, Esquire, took the oaths and his seat at the House of Commons as one of the representatives of this city. On Sunday last, died in St. Peter's Street, Mr. George Coole, aged 43, formerly landlord of the Isle of Wight, Hoy, in this city. Now we have a look at a few items of what might be of interest to you going on in the city over the course of the next week or so. Start off with some concerts. There's an organ recital in the cathedral, 7:45 on Tuesday, April the 24th. That features Andrew Lunsden, organist and director of music. That will cost you £8, but it includes a glass of wine after the concert. Well, that's a good value. Sunday, April the 29th, Winchester College concert in New Hall, 7:30 p.m. Queen of the Muses, Elizabeth I, Tallis, Bird, Dowland, performed by, I think this is pronounced Stile Antico, vocal ensemble. Tuesday, May the 1st, lunchtime recital in the cathedral, 1 p.m. Peter Simmons Specialist Music Course students, their annual concert. That's free, but there's a retiring collection. Friday to Monday, that's May the 4th to the 7th, is the Winchester Chamber Music Festival at the Discovery Centre. The Bridge Trio concerts, discovery sessions, school concerts and masterclass exploring music by Mendelssohn, Haydn, Mozart and Schubert. Now, a couple of items from the Theatre Royal. There's Flamenco Live on Friday, April the 27th at 8:30 p.m. And changing over to another bit of paper, Great Expectations. Now, Great Expectations features the Olivia Award-winning actress Nicola McAuliffe. She will be playing Miss Havisham in the Theatre Royal, in Winchester Theatre Royal, Winchester's adaptation of Charles Dickens' Great Expectations. That's on next week. And it's a new stage adaptation by Tilted Wig Productions, this Charles Dickens classic Victorian novel. It's at the Theatre Royal, April the 24th to the 28th at 7:30 p.m. and there are matinees on Wednesday and Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Well, before we move on to the general news, I know that many of you will be waiting with mounting anticipation for the lighting up times for this week. This week the sun will rise at about 6 a.m. and it will set at about 8:15 p.m. So on to items of general news with Frieda starting us off, please.
This article is about the restoration at Winchester City Mill and it's headed Uncovering Mill's Ancient Structure After Flood Damage. Vital work to restore Winchester's historic city mill is underway and for the first time since 1744, ancient oak beams have been exposed. The city mill is the oldest working mill in the UK. It dates back to at least 932, and it is thought that there was a Roman mill there before that. Most of the internal beam work is from the late 14th century and early 15th century, and the brickwork was added in the 1740s. After being flooded in 2014 and the lower floor being inundated with water for 3.5 months, badly needed repair work was undertaken on the visitor side of things. Winchester City Mill manager Rick Weeks said, "We then began stripping back partitions which had been in place for well over 100 years, and unfortunately this revealed that the beamwork behind was in an awful state of decay." After a fundraising campaign, the mill raised over £92,000, which allowed the restoration work to begin. Whilst the repair work is being carried out, thanks to a National Trust flood resilience grant, work to improve future resilience of the building structurally against any future flood risk is also possible. When we first began stripping the partition down on the lower floor, we could see the beamwork from the lower floor for the first time, and the condition of it became very apparent. The floorboards are being lifted to reveal the sections of decaying beams, and making individual assessments of each beam and joist as to how to repair it and retain as much of the historic and medieval material as possible. Most of the beam work predates the Mary Rose, and some of the beams have been dendro-dated, and it was calculated that they were growing during the time of the Norman Conquest. Rick Weeks said nobody would have seen what we are seeing now since at least 1744, when the tenant at the time, James Cook, put the current floor down. This is a less than a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be able to see the conservation in action. In some places, new oak will be grafted into the old material, and in others we'll be tying new beams alongside the old beams. Our ambition is to preserve and conserve as much of what is historical as possible, and to lose as little as possible. The City Mill is still open for visitors to observe the work, whilst the structural work being completed, which is due to be finished in July.
This article is entitled Winchester University Launches Anti-Semitism Probe into Lecturers' Posts. An investigation has been launched into social media posts made by a Winchester University lecturer regarding Jews and Zionism. Academic Jane Dipple, a member of the Labour Party, is alleged to have made the comments as the Labour anti-Semitism row continues to make the headlines. It comes after Mrs. Dipple, a lecturer in media and communication, was among 40 senior academics who signed a letter in The Guardian defending Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn. The posts surfaced in a report on Tuesday by the news website Huffington Post. Among the Facebook posts republished by Huffington Post was one from Stibble's account saying, "This is not an anti-Semitic rant. This is about a Zionist attempt at creating a pure race which sits alongside all other countries and have tried to do the same." Another said, "What's the Holocaust Remembrance Alliance about anyway?" An article from far-right website The Daily Stormer was also shared with the account with the headline, "BBC to replace male Jew political editor with female Jew." According to Huffington Post, Ms. Dipple is also a member of the Palestine Live Facebook page, which is notorious for posting Holocaust denial myths, allegations of Israel's involvement in the 9/11 and 7/7 terror attacks, and the training of Islamic State fighters, and conspiracy theories involving the Rothschild family. In response, a University of Winchester spokesperson yesterday told the Chronicle, "We are shocked by the content in these posts and we have launched an urgent investigation which is currently underway. We do not tolerate anti-Semitism and we take any allegations of such activity extremely seriously." Ms. Dibble's comments were made in a personal capacity, not on behalf of the university, and they do not reflect the university's views in any way. We are deeply committed to the equality and diversity in everything we do. A spokesman for the Labour Party told Huffington Post, "The Labour Party is committed to challenging and campaigning against anti-Semitism in all its forms. All complaints of anti-Semitism are taken extremely seriously. These are fully investigated in line with our rules and procedures, and any appropriate disciplinary action is taken." Momentum, of which Ms. Dibble is also a member, made a similar statement. Ewan Phillips, spokesman for Labour Against Anti-Semitism, said, "The horrific content posted by Jane Dipple is sadly typical of much of what we have witnessed in our investigations." The Hampshire Chronicle attempted to contact Ms. Dibble, but without success.
And now an article dealing with an item we've already mentioned, headed "No Confidence Vote for Police Chief." Hampshire officers have passed a vote of no confidence in Police and Crime Commissioner Michael Lane, as it was revealed he would not be pumping any additional cash into frontline policing. Originally sent out to 2,800 serving officers, it is understood 1,600 responded, with about 98% agreeing with the no confidence vote. However, despite the result, the vote, put forward by the chairman of Hampshire Police Federation, John Apter, is not binding and won't force the Police and Crime Commissioner out of office. Mr. Lane said, "I care about our police officers and staff and working to ensure people in Hampshire, the Isle of Wight, Portsmouth and Southampton are safer is my absolute priority. I take the views of all police officers, including those who took the time to vote, extremely seriously, and I will continue to work to build confidence and trust. I have done all I can and continue to do all I can within budget to ensure victims are supported, vulnerable people are protected, and the Chief Constable is empowered to ensure policing is as effective and efficient as possible. I continue to invest more than 98% of my total budget in policing. The vote comes as Mr. Lane was quizzed by the Hampshire Police and Crime Panel in Winchester last Thursday. During the meeting, the Commissioner revealed that thanks to the £12 precept tax increase, 150 policing posts were saved this year. The government gave Police and Crime Commissioners, that is PCCs, across the country, the option for the 2018-19 financial year to increase precept by £1 a month per household, which Hampshire did. However, it was also revealed that 122 additional posts were lost before the budget was set. Asked by New Forest Councillor Steve Clark about the losses, Mr. Lane said, "They were lost a while ago." But while being pressed by Councillor Clark, the Commissioner seemed to dodge the question, adding, "I cannot give you the headline figure that you want." However, despite the extra cash raised, frontline policing is not set to benefit, as the money is to be put into reserves. This comes after the Commissioner announced plans to increase his office's budget, despite cuts to policing roles. Test Valley Borough Councillor Ian Richards grilled Mr. Lane about why no new officers will be joining the force, despite, he said, Surrey's PCC announcing their force will be recruiting 200 new cops. Mr. Lane said, "Some of my colleagues have decided to use a different risk profile while looking into their force's futures. My firm view is that we should be erring on what is safe. For example, we do not know what next year's budget will be."
We now come to a piece which is headed "Suspicious Package Sparks Evacuation at MP's Office." The centre of Romsey came to a standstill after a suspicious package was sent to the office of MP Caroline Noakes. A letter containing brown powder was opened by staff at the Romsey and Southampton North MP's office yesterday morning, sparking a mass response by emergency services outside the Conservative Club, which houses the MP's office. It saw Marketplace and Church Street shut as cordons were put in place and forensic officers swept the scene. Around 20 vehicles from Hampshire Fire and Rescue, police and ambulance staff crowded the streets. I didn't read that very well. I'll read it again. Around 20 vehicles from Hampshire Fire and Rescue, police and ambulance staff crowded the streets, parked in front of Marketplace and Romsey Abbey, as police tried to discover what the substance was. After a cordon was in place for around 4 hours, police then revealed that the brown powder was, in fact, harmless, and that they were now investigating a serious hoax. Police were called shortly after 11 a.m. when staff in the Immigration Minister's constituency office opened a letter that arrived yesterday morning through the post. A staff member inside the office said the letter looked immediately suspicious, and upon opening it, we then followed our emergency procedure and called the police. It was very worrying. It's not something we're used to, and it came as a shock. We never make that call to the emergency services lightly. The letter did contain a coloured powder, and the forensic officers and police kept us informed. We felt very safe throughout. All of us in the office want to thank the terrific work of the emergency services in keeping us and the people of Romsey safe. Caroline Noakes, who was in London at the time, said, "It appears this was a hoax, and I am relieved that all those involved are safe and well. My thanks go to the emergency services, who have dealt with the incident so swiftly and professionally." A police spokesman said, "Following tests, we can now confirm that the substance is not hazardous." There is a cuff showing these forensic officers, fully suited up with breathing kit and purple gloves, walking through the Romsey Conservative Club on their way to deal with the situation.
This article refers to the loss of wildlife in the county. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust has condemned the destruction of nightingale habitat at Casbrook Common near Romsey, the second most important site for the endangered bird in Hampshire. The site has been recognised locally by conservation experts for its importance, with three of the 25 singing male nightingales recorded in the country in the county last year found here. However, local volunteer surveyors working on a new project to record data about nightingales have found that the site has now been bulldozed just ahead of the bird's breeding season. A trust spokesperson said, "This destruction of one of the last refuges of our nightingales is appalling. It's doubly tragic that this has come to light just as local conservation organisations and volunteers are working together to identify where this wonderful bird can still be found and protected. We're also deeply concerned that under government planning policy proposals, local wildlife sites like these will have even less protection. Cases like this show why the government must act to save our most precious species and take action against those who destroy the last few places they're clinging on. The common nightingale is widely celebrated in literature and music for the beauty of its song. The Old English form, nightingale, means night songstress. They're long-distance migrants, wintering in West Africa and returning to South-East Britain for the summer. They breed in mid-May and usually have one clutch of 4 to 5 eggs a year. In Hampshire, the nightingale has declined sharply since the 1950s. In the late 1980s, the county population was estimated at 204 to 360 pairs. During the most recent British Trust for Ornithology surveys, the population had dropped to 61 to 65 pairs, and their overall range fell by 3/4. To help establish the locations and number of breeding territories of our local nightingales, the Wildlife Trust is working with the British Trust for Ornithology and the Hampshire Ornithological Society to recruit volunteers to carry out a full survey of all areas of suitable habitat in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight during the 2018 breeding season. By identifying singing males at this time of year, we are able to learn more about the species' distribution, habitat and range. Armed with that information, we will engage with local landowners and encourage them to bring sites back into a favourable condition for the nightingale through habitat management. This includes creating patches of dense scrub along woodland edges to provide nesting and feeding opportunities. The Trust has 26,000 members and owns or manages a number of reserves across the two counties.
And now an item headed Public Support for Music Venue. The owner of Winchester's Railway Inn has said he is overwhelmed by the outpouring of support from the community. One of the longest-running independent music venues in the city, described by singer-songwriter Frank Turner as the only venue in town and still is, it has been a consistent source of emerging new talent for decades. However, the venue has recently turned to crowdfunding in the hope of securing £31,900 to modernise the venue on St Paul's Hill Full Flood and guarantee its long-term future. Dan Lloyd, owner, said, "It's incredibly hard for us to make a return some nights because we subsidise 90% of the smaller shows in order to nurture talent in town." The ultimate aim of the appeal is to put the Railway Inn in a position to help build a more stable music scene in Winchester, he said. If there's only one place, it makes it very vulnerable and more likely to fail. We have been working with the Hyde Tavern and Willow Tree to take music and local bands to different audiences in the city. In the immediate future, the venue needs to raise £10,000 to improve the accessibility in line with, quotes, attitude is everything, close quotes, ratings, or it may be forced to close. Dan said, the wolf is not at the door yet, but it is coming. However, he is positive about the future, thanks mainly to the generosity of the community that surrounds it. Over the years, he said, we have had all sorts of problems, but it's almost a case of build it and they will come. Whenever we need something, the community provides it. By yesterday, £8,944 had been pledged by 191 supporters. There are only 24 days until the campaign is due to end.
This piece tells us about a new advice service which is going to be available for the homeless. Citizens Advice Winchester District has launched a new fortnightly advice service for residents at the 17-bed Winchester Night Shelter for the Homeless. Citizens Advice will provide an additional level of support to residents to help them get back on their feet. The sessions will be provided by an experienced volunteer advisor and will help residents resolve issues involving debt, benefits, opening a bank account, family issues, form filling, and liaising with government agencies. Natalie Webb, Chief Officer for Citizens Advice Winchester District, said, "We're really excited by the extension of our service into Winchester Night Shelter. There can be many reasons why someone who's experienced homelessness may not come to us directly for help. So taking our service to the people who are most in need is an obvious way of providing the best service we can." Michelle Price, Night Shelter Manager, said, "We're delighted to be working with Citizens Advice to offer this new service. They will now be able to access expert advice on a range of issues from the comfort of the night shelter, which is on Jury Street. It's vital that our residents receive all the support they can to enable them to move on from homelessness." Citizens Advice Winchester District is a local independent charity that offers free, impartial advice to anyone who needs support. It is based on St. George's Street, with services in Bishop's Waltham and outreaches in Alsford, Denmead and Wickham.
This article is about the future of the Woodman Inn on the Winchester Road at Upham, of which there is a picture. The battle is set to be resumed today over the future of a shuttered pub near Bishop's Waltham. The Woodman Inn on Winchester Road, Upham, has been closed for 2 years, and developer Richard Aston wants to demolish it and build 4 houses on the plot. But planning officers at the City Council are recommending the application be refused. Villagers are trying to save their pub, one of only 2 in the village. Among the objectors are the Parish Council, as they would like to retain the building as a community asset such as a shop. The village's last shop closed around 2 years ago, a few yards up the road. The Upham Shop Action Group says the site is ideal. A USAG member has proposed a shop, a bleak cafe, with 4 smaller 3-bedroom houses, 2 1-bedroom flats, and 15 parking spaces. The Urban Design Section and Historic Environment teams at the City Council objects because the early 19th century has intrinsic qualities as a product of its orientation, scale and features. Some 11 representations have been sent to the Council supporting the application, saying the site has become an eyesore and redevelopment is needed to, quote the Council report, improve the image of the village. The action group says the site has only become dilapidated over the last 18 months, because no effort has been made by the present owner to maintain the building. It argues that the guide rent of £37,500 is excessive, meaning that the pub was not being marketed at a reasonable rent. A report to the planning committee included advice from the external valuer Florets, which has examined the marketing of the pub. Florets said, "We are content that the property has been fully exposed to the market, covering a broad range of sectors, public house and alternative community uses. The lack of a purchaser or a tenant being secured is a strong indicator of lack of demand, and the reasons set out as to why this has been unsuccessful are clear indicators of the struggles that this property faces and will continue to do so going forward. Florets consider that reasons such as local competition, the building not being suitable for managed pub companies, and market conditions indicate the lack of demand. Recommending refusal, the council reported, said, the loss of non-designated heritage asset would be harmful to the character of the area and is considered unacceptable. It is not considered that the option to convert the building has been properly explored. The development would fail to respond positively to the character and context of the locality by virtue of a design that fails to be informed by or respond positively to the site's context. The application cannot be supported."
And I'm going to start with a rather mystifying headline, "Sausages Dawdle for Charity." But I will tell you about the picture underneath, which might help. And it's two little dachshunds, one called Percy and one called Hugo, and they are looking very alert and ready to go. And the item reads, "They only have little legs, but these dachshunds help to raise a big amount for charity. More than 30 of the sausage dogs gathered at Down Farm in Hebborne Worthy on Sunday for the inaugural Dachshund Dawdle, raising £220 for hearing dogs for deaf people. The pack set off from the farmyard on one of two routes, a mile-long circuit for those with very little legs, and a slightly longer route for the more energetic. Taking part were miniature wire-haired, miniature smooth-haired, standard smooth-haired and standard wire-haired dachshunds from as far afield as Bournemouth and London. The gathering was very good-natured and well-behaved, with barely a bark out of place. Britt Marie Wallach, who attended with her miniature poodle," which I don't think that quite fits, "said, 'I can't believe how much we've raised today. Everyone has been so generous. It is the first time I've been to an event like this, and it was amazing.' Katie Brown, organiser, said, 'It has been so much fun. To see so many dachshunds in one place was hilarious.'"
You, Daphne. Well, that's all that we have for you this week. Just another reminder, Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870 370. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. And, of course, many thanks to our talented readers, Frieda Bates.
Goodbye.
Paul Maxwell Tomlinson.
Goodbye.
And Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter Lydiard. Would you please put the memory stick and the address label back in the wallet when you've finished and return it to us as soon as possible? Goodbye.